Thought Leadership Studio.
You're listening to Thought Leadership Studio, the podcast that helps you master high-level positive mass influence to create distinctive business niches, captivate an audience, grow your following, and change the game by changing the frame with strategic thought leadership.
Thought Leadership Studio.
Welcome back to Thought Leadership Studio. I'm your host, Chris McNeil, and this is the last two-digit episode of Thought Leadership Studio, episode 99, Leadership That Listens with Dr. Roger Girard. From Command and Control to Purpose and Presence, How Thoughtful Leaders Empower Professionals, Elevate Culture, and Rediscover Fulfillment. And what this episode will do for you is help you explore human-centered leadership by discovering how great leaders build relationships, remove barriers, and unlock each team member's unique potential. Could also say each client's unique potential, or in some cases, each audience member's unique potential. To understand the roots of professional disengagement, to learn why many professionals feel alienated or commoditized in fields like healthcare and education, and what can be done to restore meaning. To rethink management myths by challenging outdated command and control models with Roger's perspective on why they fail and what must replace them. To gain from learning about real-world stories of transformation by getting inspired by compelling stories of people breaking free from roles that don't fit and finding purpose, even if it means changing careers entirely. And to help you reflect on your own path, walking away with deep questions and practical ideas for aligning your work with what truly feeds your spirit. But before we dive further in, let's take a quick step back. If you're new here, welcome to Thought Leadership Studio. I'm Chris McNeil, strategic thought leadership coach, consultant, and trainer, developer of the thought process of strategic thought leadership, and author of the upcoming book, Strategic Thought Leadership. But I created this podcast to empower forward-thinking leaders like you to break free from conventional, outdated marketing traps that treat people as data points rather than the engaged learners they are. Strategic thought leadership shifts the game by focusing on guiding your audience to new ways of thinking that help them extract more value out of your product or service category, make smarter buying decisions, or maybe even attach new higher values to your category while leading them to also revere your or your organization's special, unique benefits or ways of doing things. It's about empowerment, reshaping beliefs, expanding worldviews, and amplifying impact in ways that traditional marketing can't touch. You'll learn to create content that people want to consume and that they keep coming back to you for. So some episodes of this podcast are like workshops to hone your thought leadership skills. And some include interviews of models of excellence, real-world examples of leaders who are either shifting industries, challenging norms, and building true authority, or who maybe offer specialized skills or knowledge relevant to strategic thought leadership. In this episode, I'm honored to host Dr. Roger Girard, author, leadership expert, and champion of meaningful work. So what happens when professionals feel trapped in roles that don't feed their spirit? Roger draws from over 50 years of experience transforming organizations from hospitals to classrooms by helping leaders trade command and control for connection and purpose. As co-author of On the Mend and author of Lead with Purpose, he shows how lean thinking, when done right, empowers people rather than squeezes them. Roger focuses on professionals, but these lessons could apply just as much to entrepreneurs, founders, C-suite leaders, and their customers, clients, and audience members. Roger and I explore how a leader can help others reclaim passion and how great leaders create space for that rediscovery. He also shares hard truths, hopeful shifts, and real stories of transformation you won't want to miss. So without further ado, let's jump right into the interview.
Thought Leadership Studio.
So I'm Chris McNeil, your host of Thought Leadership Studio, and today I am joined across Zoom by Dr. Roger A. Gerard, an author, speaker, and executive consultant with over 50 years of leadership experience. As the former chief learning officer of Fedicare, he pioneered lean methodologies to drive organizational excellence. That's a great topic itself. Dr. Gerard is the author of Owning the Room and co-author of On the Mend. His latest book, Lead with Purpose, Reignite Passion and Engagement for Professionals in Crisis, tackles the growing issue of disengagement among professionals and offers leaders a roadmap to restore passion and purpose in the workplace. Great to have you here, Roger.
Thank you. I'm pleased to be here, Chris.
Or great to have you there in Wisconsin from South Carolina, where I'm at. But the miracle of technology puts us across the table from each other. We sometimes like to start these interviews with getting a little context for the listener from where you're coming from in case they're not already familiar with your work. And I know we're going to dive a lot into this lead with purpose and disengagement issues and what to do about them. Was there a pivotal moment or a learning experience or an event that triggered this direction in your work that you could share with the listener to give them some context?
Let's talk about a little bit of my background, and that background might offer the context you're looking for. I spent the first 10 years of my career in the 70s in health agency kinds of work. I spent time with the Heart Association, the Cancer Society. I was a field representative and then a field director, and eventually became the field director responsible for the entire Metro Detroit area when I was in Michigan. And went from there in the Heart Association to the American Cancer Society. I learned a lot of things in those two environments. I learned how to form a board and committees and put together volunteers who then did all of the public education, the fundraising, and all of the operational activities of those organizations. I also learned a lot about the learning process. I learned training in my Heart Association experience by taking on the responsibility for the cardiopulmonary resuscitation training of instructors and instructor trainers throughout the state of Michigan. So as I was learning these things in the 70s, I became very aware of what leadership is, what volunteerism is, what motivation is, and how all of these things work together. In that journey, I then became acquainted with a company called the Employers Association of Detroit, which is a personnel services organization in the Detroit area. Eventually joined their staff and started doing management training and executive coaching as part of my journey in the 80s there. And one of my clients was a very large system called Gulf and Western Manufacturing. G&W was one of the largest companies on the planet at the time. And as we did our work around the country and internationally, I learned that there is a huge cultural element involved in people's understanding of leadership and how all of that works. I went to work for a company called Sandy Corporation in the mid-80s. And in that capacity, I was a creative executive and creative director on projects with Burroughs, IBM, Ford Motor Company, and General Motors Company. And in those projects, I was building leadership training programs for those companies as they were trying to reinvent themselves after the quality fiascos of the 70s and 80s. So I was just blessed with experiences and people in my life who were able to mentor me and coach me and lead me to my own thoughts about what leadership is, what constitutes motivation, what constitutes enterprise. And I went back to my university setting, got a master's degree, and then a doctorate in management. All of that occurred around 1990, and I've then joined ThetaCare and became their chief learning officer with the primary responsibility of doing all of their leadership development. I also took responsibility for all of their clinical and technical educators and managed their entire learning operations. They wanted to call me the chief teaching officer, and I said, no, that's not what I do. It's about learning, and it's about causing an environment where professionals can come together and learn.
Love that.
As we did that, I brought into ThetaCare a number of people around quality improvement that I had been associated with in the manufacturing industry. And we learned all about lean enterprise work. And we did the work of teaching people in healthcare how to apply lean manufacturing methodologies to patients on carts and patients in a captive way through surgical processes and all of the things that happen in the healthcare environment. So that's been my journey. As I went on that journey, I saw something that very deeply disturbed me. A lot of people in the healthcare industry and in the teaching industry feel alienated. They don't feel well served. They don't feel like they're being treated as the professionals that they are. And that includes physicians, nurses, technical people in the healthcare industry, teachers in elementary and secondary education. People are feeling marginalized. People are feeling commoditized. It's almost like plug and play for some of these professions. And that's not a good thing. When people come into their professions, they come into their professions with certain expectations. They don't expect to be treated like cogs in a wheel. And unfortunately, given the financial constraints and pressures, the societal constraints and pressures, a lot of traditional management process tends to commoditize the professionals doing the daily work of the organization. That is not a script for creating high levels of engagement.
What's the thinking behind that?
The thinking on the part of the leadership to commoditize?
Yes.
The thinking behind that is a nurse is a nurse is a nurse is a nurse. Well, that's not exactly true. An ICU nurse is a very different commodity than an ER nurse or a surgical nurse or a med-surg nurse or a physician office nurse. They are very, very different creatures with very different backgrounds and very different training. And we can't just plug and play. We can't just move people around and expect them to be fully functioning in their profession. And yet that's what's happening in the interests of saving money, in the interests of creating efficiencies. And what we're doing is we're bringing everything to the mean, as opposed to advancing high levels of performance.
That makes sense in a sense that this reductionist thinking where people are reduced down to a role, you miss
Correct.
diversity of talent
Correct.
that could flourish if it was allowed the space to do that. You've been in leadership roles, leadership training roles before you dove deep into the academic side. Was I understanding that right?
You understand that perfectly. The academic was an afterthought.
Yeah, I think that's fascinating because I've seen the other direction a lot more
Sure.
than that.
I have what's called an applications doctorate. I got my doctorate from Walden University. And in order to accomplish the doctorate, you had to do not only a breadth study in your areas of knowledge and a depth study, you also had to do application projects and prove that you can change something.
I
And
love
you
that.
have to do that multiple times before you even do your dissertation.
Well, there's a couple of themes that I think could be really powerful for our listener. One is from the position of someone in that commodity category who doesn't want to be there, how do they break out of it? Or does that have to be an organizational culture or belief system shift? Would be one
It's
of
a
those.
mix of both. Yeah, it's a mix of both. I coach individuals frequently, and part of the coaching is obviously a listening process, but you start with inquiry, and the questions I ask are around what does your soul tell you? What does your heart tell you? What does your sense of self tell you about where you need to be right now? And I try to elicit what their intentions are for their career, for their life, for their daily sustenance. Are they in a survival mode or are they in a growth mode? What are they doing with their lives and their careers right now? Once I understand that, we can then move people individually to a better place by helping them understand what they have to do to feed themselves, not just financially, but also professionally in their growth and personally in their sense of service to the larger community. Most people who come into teaching or healthcare, they come in because they want to serve people. They're already motivated. I'm on the circuit right now telling people you don't have to motivate professionals.
Sure.
Really, when you think you have to do that, what you're really doing is manipulating them
That's right.
to accomplish your ends. Professionals are motivated and they're trained to do the right thing if you've hired the right professionals. So get out of this sense that you have to motivate them and get into a place where how do you serve them so that they can work at their optimum level? How do you make them wildly successful? That should be the leadership question.
Is it getting barriers out of the way for one thing? And I recall another brilliant management thinker I interviewed some time ago who brought up the point of when you start putting these extrinsic carrot and stick type motivations in place, you actually detract from the intrinsic motivation people naturally get from doing good with their work.
Absolutely. There was a book written by a guy named Dalvik Kahn back in the 80s who it was Punished by Rewards, which is a great book if you're interested in the
Love the
research.
title.
Well, yeah, and that was exactly his point as he did his research. Most people come into their work intrinsically motivated. They want to do it because they want to do it. And then we damage that when we bring them in. We impose goals on them that they didn't have when they came in. Some of that imposition is appropriate. The organization has goals too, but there has to be a marriage between what the organization wants to accomplish and what the individual professional needs to accomplish for themselves. And if you don't create that marriage, it's not going to work.
So, what would be your advice, first of all, to someone who's listening to this, who is a professional and feels constrained in such a situation or commoditized? And kind of a theme of this podcast is how to break out of the commodity category and be a
Good
proprietary.
deal. Working with individuals, my advice to them is to number one, know exactly who they are and know exactly what they want out of their profession and their daily life. What do they want? What will feed their spirit? And to the extent that they can, within the environment they're in, organize their work to feed their own spirit, do it. Once you go there, if there is still further need, talk to your boss, talk to a mentor, get people around you involved in that conversation so that your professional capacity can be retained and you can get more of what you need and want in order to be a satisfied professional. If that doesn't work, you may have to find work somewhere else. And the reality for the individual is you're unlikely to make big changes in the organization you're working in. It may be time for you to find another organization where you can flourish more effectively. I've had to do that in my career about 8 times. And it's scary. And you have to let go of what you have in order to get what you want. And that's a hard equation for some people. It's insecure. But if you truly want to be satisfied in your profession, in your career, sometimes you have to do that. As a leader, it's my job to know what the people who report to me need in their lives and in their careers. I have to know more than just their resume. I have to know why they're doing the work they're doing. I have to know them on a human level, eyeball to eyeball, belly button to belly button. We have to understand together why we're all here. And if I can, as a leader, understand that, I can start doing that removing obstacles thing. I can start doing that. How do I make your job more enriching for you, so that you get out of your career position what you need to have? I also want to create a world in which you can be wildly successful. So you have to tell me what that is. And if you tell me what that is, we raise the probability that I can help you do that. It's all about probabilities. It's all about relationships. When Gallup does their studies on engagement, one of the things that they hammer over and over again is, people leave organizations because of the relationship they either have or don't have with their boss.
Yeah.
That's why they leave. And so if you understand that, you're going to work to have a really powerful relationship with the people who work with you.
And you think it's a matter of task versus relationship focus in leadership sometimes?
It's both. At a professional level, it's both. I'll give you an example in the teaching industry. You know, I have an acquaintance who is a teacher in a high school. She's a marvelous artist, and she teaches the arts in this school, and she does an incredible job with the students. And increasingly, she has to do things outside of teaching the arts. She has to create a phone corral in her classroom so that students aren't distracted by their phones. She has to play cop and make sure that people are disciplined enough to do the work that they're there to do. She has to fill out forms and all kinds of administrative things. And then she has to follow a script in her teaching instead of allowing the creative energies of the students guide what needs to be learned. This teacher is increasingly being confined to a very scripted set of behaviors, some of which has to do with the arts and much of it which does not have to do with the arts. How is that enriching for that teacher? It's not.
I imagine it's not, right? And you, if my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, have had some involvement in the lean methodology.
Oh, yes.
Have you found some insight into some of these underlying belief systems, maybe contrasting the lean versus command and control, hierarchical type management thinking, which still seems to be very prevalent, although we've certainly seen plenty of evidence that it's not the best.
Oh, my gosh. Much of leadership thinking today is over a century old. It's still Taylor-esque. It's all about command and control, measurement and observation and shame and blame. And all of that is adverse to creating a fulfilling professional environment. When we brought in the lean enterprise work into ThetaCare, I had already had about 10 years of experience in the quality teaching industry around quality being conformance to requirements and all of the stuff that goes with that. I was an early adapter of quality circle methodology in the late 70s, early 80s, as the auto industry was in free fall. And what happened in my own understanding was that a lot of what we were seeing as misperformance was a leadership issue, not a staff issue, not an employee issue, but a management issue. And I spent quite a bit of time in the 80s trying to get inside of that and really understand it. So as I did all of that, and then discovered Lean, I made sure in working with the consultants we brought in that we had a culturally robust approach to Lean implementation. The consultants wanted to come in at first and do kind of a turnkey operation and start with the senior leadership and mandate a whole lot of stuff to staff. And I, that's not going to happen on my watch. Mm-hmm. Not going to happen. We're going to do some experiments. We're going to do some small studies. We're going to teach employees success. We're going to teach employees how to simplify, how to map out a process, how to take out redundancy, how to take out all of these areas of waste. And in that process, listen to the employees' wisdom and understanding because they're the ones doing the daily work.
Yes.
And we did probably 5 or 10 demonstration projects before we even asked for high leadership commitment to the process. And the employees sold it. Lean was not mean to our employees.
Mm-hmm.
Lean was understood to be a way to improve quality by taking out waste in the processes. And our professionals wanted quality to improve. They're professionals.
Absolutely. I mean, that's where the satisfaction comes from for a lot of people, isn't it? Doing good work. It has a yes. positive impact.
If you read On the Men that John Toussaint and I wrote, John was our CEO and I was the chief learning officer. John and I wrote a book on the men to talk about that whole process and how we put that in place in ThetaCare.
Interesting. I'll make sure to share a link to that for our listener on the episode page.
Excellent.
You brought up earlier creating space for people to discover who they are, what they want. Simple statements, but that's really profound. And perhaps a place of breakthrough for people who might feel constrained to, oh, this is my role here, so I got to fit my identity into this box, at least during these hours. And maybe part of that is getting out of that box of the role as it's defined. How do you do that? How do you create space for someone to do those kind of discovery questions? I can just imagine a listener wondering, well, am I sure about that? Do I know myself at that level?
I'm kind of amazed as I age how many people come into their professions because that's what daddy wanted me to do, or that's what mom wanted me to do, or that's what my brothers and sisters did, and I'm just following in their footsteps. A lot of people come into their lives this way, or they get trained in a college academic degree because maybe I can make a lot of money. So they go into college and they become a lawyer, or they become a nurse or a doctor. I've had doctors who have come into their professions that way because parents were physicians. And in one case, I was interviewing a very troubled doctor who was misbehaving with the other professional staff. And I was asked to intervene and spend some time with this guy. And so I did, and I asked him why the behaviors were happening and what was going on. And he said, you know what, I hate being a doctor. And then there was silence. And I then asked him, what does that mean? And after a little bit of time, he said, you know, I thought I was going to make a lot of money and serve a lot of people, but I don't feel the gratitude. I don't feel the satisfaction. I don't like doing what I'm doing anymore. And then there was more silence. And then he said, what are you thinking? And my reaction was, I never want you to touch my body. If you don't like doing what you're doing, you are the wrong guy to be my doctor, period. So now it's our job to help you find out what you would love to do. He said, I already know that. I said, what's that? He said, I love tromping around in the woods. I love being out and about in nature. I like to climb hills, and if there's a mountain, I'm going to go after it. I like to put on a pair of boots and slop around in the mud. That's what I love. Today, he's a forest ranger.
No kidding. And much happier as a result.
Doing what he loves. See, I think all of us kind of come to life with a set of gifts and a set of preferences, a set of leanings. And if we don't respect that, we're not going to be happy people. Now, I'm not a psychologist. I studied psychology as part of my doctorate, but I'm not a psychologist. But I know enough to be dangerous. And what I think is we have to respect what our inner selves are telling us. We have to respect why we are doing what we're doing. I can tell you many stories just like that of people I've encountered. And the reason I was brought into the mix was because those folks were behaving in troubled ways and their leadership didn't know what to do with them. And so they asked me to help. All you have to do is ask a few questions and pretty soon you figure out what they really love.
I can imagine someone listening to this who has employees, maybe a large company even, who's wondering, well, how do I start questioning myself to make sure that I don't have blind spots that are creating these kinds of situations for people?
I love it. I love the question. Thank you.
Sure.
I do an entire day with some groups entitled Dealing with Cynics, Apathetics, and Naysayers.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the symptoms when something is wrong, okay? The cynics have been damaged trust-wise. They don't trust anybody. The apathetics have given up over time. They've tried to do things in certain ways, and it hasn't worked, and so they've just submitted and they'll show up. They won't show up with a lot of energy, but they'll show up. The naysayers are those who will resist everything you want to do. They've spent a career trying to put things in place the way they want it. And now you want to come in as a leader and change it. And so they're going to resist you. So what you have to understand is all of these characters are behaving the way they're behaving for reasons. And if you can get at the reasons, you have a chance for breakthrough. You have a chance to say, okay, how do we satisfy this in you? How do we do something different so that you can drop that cynicism, so that you can stop being a naysayer, so that you can stop being apathetic, and you can start coming to work every day with energy? Because if we can't do that, we have to help you out of here so that you can be happy somewhere else. That's the deal.
Sure.
But right now, you're contagious and you're harming the organization. The leadership has to be aware of how their people are dealing with everyday work. If you're not out on the floor, if you're not out and about with the people doing the daily work, if they don't know you by name and by voice, then you're not doing your job as a leader. If you're leading from an office somewhere in an office building, and your staff are out on a plant floor somewhere building product or creating services, you don't understand leadership at all. All you're doing is you're an elevated manager with a great title, but you're not leading.
I'm trying to remember if it was Tom Peters who called that management by wandering around.
And in the lean enterprise work, it's called go and see.
Ah, I love that.
Go to Gemba. Go and see.
Yeah, I've seen methods that use the leverage of taking the leadership to the point of contact with the customer and asking how many ways does our system get in the way of people serving the customer directly.
Sure.
And it seems to
we did that with the lean enterprise work. I tell you, in one case, and we wrote about this in On the Mend, the nurses were convinced in the obstetrics area that it was in the best interest of the baby and the new mom to put everybody in a wheelchair and wheel them down to the front door so that hubby could pick up mom and baby at the front door. And then the nurse would pick the baby up out of the mom's lap and put it in the car seat in the back of the car for the mom. And they thought they were really being service oriented. We put a small group of moms together with a bunch of nurses to say, is this process the right process? And the moms were absolutely clear that it was absolutely the wrong process. They did not want to hand their baby over to a nurse, number one.
Nobody
They didn't want to be in a wheelchair. They want to walk out with their baby in their arms, and they want to put that baby in the car seat themselves. We had to change the entire set of paradigm thinking among the nurses in order to help them understand what was being done there. And I, at the time, my wife was in OB having our child. And so I had the personal experience of going through that with my wife and new baby while we were studying all of this in the Lean Enterprise work.
Wow. Talk about bringing it close.
And Deborah absolutely confirmed it. She confirmed it. And in fact, they wanted her bed rest for 48 hours. And after, you know, like 12 hours after giving birth, she was hungry for a hamburger, and there was a restaurant down in the parking lot, and we escaped. We left the hospital so she could get a hamburger and brought her back and put her back in the hospital bed.
Wow.
12 hours after birth.
Wow. It's amazing how many organizations don't ask the customer, what do you really want from us? What's really important to you? And you just mentioned paradigms. If you had a magic control panel and you could redesign a few dominant paradigms in business thinking and professional businesses in particular, what would those be and what would you redesign them to be?
Wow. Another great question. Created an article that'll be published shortly called 10 Ways Healthcare Leaders Sabotage Success. And it has to do with exactly that subject. I'll give you a few. Leaders think their job is to motivate others. No, it's not. People are self-motivated. Nobody motivates me on Monday morning to get up out of my bed and have breakfast and go do what I do every day. Nobody motivates me. I'm already motivated. The best you can do is damage that by trying to manipulate me to do something that you want. So how do we leverage the motivation that people already have in their daily life? How do we bring that together? Second paradigm, they treat people as liabilities, not assets. They say people are our greatest asset. And then the minute we get into trouble, they lay people off. You don't lay off assets.
Right.
It's a total lie. And if we really want to treat people like assets, like value added to the business, then let's start behaving that way. Mm-hmm. Leaders think that once they're leaders, they don't have to go where the work is being done. They need to go where the work is being done. They need to understand all the different process steps in that work. That doesn't mean they have to be experts at it. At one point in my career, I was not only responsible for learning in the organization, but for HR, for the laboratory, for X-ray, and for behavioral health. As a vice president, I had multiple. I'm not an expert in all those things, but I had to go in those areas and make sure I understood what these people were doing every day so that I could help them. Leaders see mistakes as failure. No. Mistakes are learning. We're going to make mistakes. I was in a situation in one organization as a consultant, and I asked to see their data on needle sticks in this healthcare organization. And what I got from the chief quality officer was our reported needle sticks are, and he gave me a set of number, a monthly number. And I said, I didn't ask for your reported needle sticks. I want to know how many needle sticks occur. And so we went on the hunt and we found out that there was a lot more going on than what was being reported. And they were seeing reporting as failure. Mistakes aren't failure. Mistakes are learning. And if you're hiding that, you're not going to learn and you're not going to change the process in order to reduce the number of needle sticks. These paradigms get in the way of good leadership. One of the worst is blame and shame. Leaders permit blame and shame. They cultivate blame and shame. They do their own version of blame and shame. And when they do that, they're undermining their own power.
I agree.
What they're doing is saying, I don't have any power. It's somebody else's fault. It's a very stupid thing for a leader to do. And we see it every day. We see it in politics. We see it in corporate leadership. You bring in a new a senior executive and they blame the past executive team for all the things wrong in the organization. And no, it's not their fault. Life changes, things happen, but the blame and shame undermines confidence. It undermines trust. It tells people when you blame and shame that they could be next.
And was it Drucker?
Why would you want that environment, right?
Yeah, and it reminds me of, I think it was Drucker that said that 95% of the performance is in the system. And it's about getting, like you mentioned, getting things out of the way that are constricting people. So yep. Blame just goes in circles. You know, I can follow blame all the way down to the virus that caused my flu, that caused me to miss a day last week. You know, the universe that created the virus, where do you stop?
The paradigm shift that I would focus on would be the tendency of leaders to spin the truth. What is spin? Spin is dishonesty. Spin means I'm going to only tell you what I think you ought to know, because if I tell you the whole story, you might change your mind about something. Spin is a form of dishonesty. I did a case study with a group of about 100 leaders, and I had them in tables of 10, and I gave them a case study on an organization is going through some massive changes. They're going to close a plant in one city and open a plant in another city 300 miles away. And they wanted a communications plan. And so I challenged the tables to create the communications plan. And the plan is starts with a question from an employee: are there going to be layoffs? After a 20-minute period of working the case, I asked for results from each of the table. Not one table answered that question.
Really?
If somebody says, are there going to be layoffs? The answer is either yes or no.
Was it a fear?
Every table avoided the issue, and yes, it's fear. Fear that if you answer yes, which is likely, then you're going to have a revolt. Or if you answer no and you break the promise later on, you're going to have a revolt. So they chose not to deal with the question at all. They talked about, well, you know, we have community dynamics and we have other financial issues we got to attend to. And we got all of these factors and those factors. But they never got to the question, which was the exact purpose of the case study.
So what is the path to changing these beliefs on a large scale? Is that possible? Or do we have to just look at each individual situation? What lever points do you look for if you're brought into an organization as a consultant or coach to start to make things happen?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, a lot of what we're describing here in kind of dissecting is cultural. Mm-hmm. Cultures don't change rapidly. In fact, they're very stubborn. And if you recognize that going in, you know that you're up against a pretty big adversary if you want to change too many paradigms too fast. You can do it rapidly, but it means an entire change in leadership, literally everybody, and starting over. And when you do that, you'll probably lose about 20 to 40% of the current staff doing the daily work. And you'll have to hire a whole lot of new people in your organization and then retrain them. It's a very expensive way to do this, but sometimes it's necessary. The better way to do this is to start with leadership and small experiments and do quite a bit of training day in and day out around the idea of participative approach to making heavy decisions in the organization. And you can't do that all at once, but you can start creating examples. You can start creating internal case studies. You can start experimenting. You can start thinking in terms of how do we cause people to discover what they're truly possible to attain? How do we cause them to see what they might be able to achieve if they make a shift in some way in what they believe? And the more you can pull leaders into this over time, the more currency you're going to have and the more success you're going to have as you get this done. I had a colleague who wanted to come and watch what was going on in my organization to see if he could apply it in his. And I had him talk with my CEO for a while. Mm-hmm. And this colleague wanted to do it kind of from the middle of his organization and start with middle management. And my CEO colleague looked at him and said, "That's career threatening territory. You're probably likely to lose your job." Mm-hmm. My colleague was a little stunned by that. "Isn't that what you did?" "No, that's not what we did. I was brought in by the CEO to do the things that we did. I had 100% sponsorship and backing from my CEO." And as a change agent, you can't go into an organization and make big changes in paradigms unless you have that kind of backing.
Agreed.
Because early on in that process, I was a target. Got to be okay with that. But as people start to understand what you're trying to do, you end up creating champions who will take it forward.
Roger, this has been fascinating. And we usually wind these interviews up in a couple of ways. And the first is, what would be the top three things you'd recommend the listener do to implement some of this in their own role, if they're a professional or a leader? I know you've already brought many rich ideas forth already. So maybe just a quick summary of things we've already talked about, if that fits. And the second is, how could someone find you if they're listening to this thinking, "We need to hire Roger, Dr. Gerard, or I need to get his book"?
Yeah, I'm okay with Roger. First of all, my links to my books and my consulting work and all of that is on my website, rogergerard.com. Mm-hmm. And so anybody can go out there and find it, and some of the testimonies of my work and some of my blogs. All my blogs on LinkedIn are out there. I post them on my website as well. So there's if you want to get a flavor of the work I'm doing and the kinds of things I'm writing about, it's all out there. In terms of summarizing, I ended both Owning the Room and Lead with Purpose with pretty much the same prescription for leadership. The first thing leaders have to do is they have to make five promises. And if you make these five promises, your probability of creating engagement is going to increase quantumly. So these five promises are very important. Promise number one, I will listen to you with respect and take your input seriously. If we disagree, I will tell you why. Promise number two, I will help you learn and grow as you practice in your profession. I want you to be successful. Number three, I will help you be wildly successful, but I have to know what's in the way. So tell me the barriers, tell me all of the concerns, and I will help you be wildly successful in your profession. Promise number four, I'll make sure you're compensated competitively. compensation's a big deal. And if you're not compensating your professionals, at least competitively, you're sending a value message, and you're likely to be treating them as commodities. That is the professionals they are. Promise number five, I will have your back when things go south. Things are going to go south. We're going to make mistakes. We're going to do things that don't work. That's okay. We're learning. I'll have your back when that occurs. Those are the five promises. When we make those promises, we set the stage for something else. We set the stage for leaders to do the things they have to do in daily work. So I end each chapter with, go and see what I talked about in this chapter, and then go and do something about it. Take some kind of action. An example of that. I went to see a bunch of professionals on one of our nursing units in one of our hospitals. And they were angry because they were missing their breaks. They didn't have a bending machine in the break room. I got a whole litany of concerns. So I had a bending machine installed in their workroom the very next day. What do you think happened in that nursing unit? That's a small thing. That didn't cost me anything. I called up the soda company and I said, I need a machine.
Sure.
And what that showed the nurses is that I heard them and I acted. Leaders need to go and see, and then they need to go and do something to make things better for the professionals doing the daily work. So if you make those five promises, and then you go and see, and then you go and do, you're going to have a workforce that appreciates what you're doing as a leader and understands that they're no longer commodities, that they're very important in your business.
That's powerful. And to the listener, I'm going to link to Roger's resources on the episode page. So if you're listening on an app, just click on the link and that will bring you to it. It has been a pleasure. I greatly appreciate your wisdom and knowledge.
Thank you much, Chris. It was fun.
My pleasure.
Thought Leadership Studio.
Thanks again for tuning in to Thought Leadership Studio. I'm your host, Chris McNeil, strategic thought leadership coach and consultant and creator of The Thought Process of Strategic Thought Leadership, author of the upcoming book, Strategic Thought Leadership, where a preview is available at strategicthoughtleadership.com. And this has been episode 99, Leadership That Listens, with Dr. Roger Gerard, from Command and Control to Purpose and Presence. In this episode, we explored why many professionals feel alienated or commoditized in traditional work structures, how outdated management models erode intrinsic motivation, and what to do about it to create an ideal environment for nourishing success. The power of leaders who take time to understand individual purpose and remove obstacles to fulfillment, how to elevate culture by empowering people, and what it means to lead side by side with those delivering value. If you'd like to dig deeper into the insights we covered today and you're on a podcast app, visit the episode page at thoughtleadershipstudio.com. It's linked in the description, and there you will find a curated transcript, links to Dr. Gerard's book, in work, and condensed takeaways you can immediately apply. And while you're there, feel free to grab your free copy of The Marketer's Guide to Strategic Thought Leadership, which is also linked to in the description if you're on an app, or schedule a no-cost consultation with me where we can talk about how applying strategic thought leadership can help you develop a clear sense of mission, shape the thinking of your category, and create content that moves minds and attracts attention and customers. And if today's episode resonated with you, share it with a fellow agent of change. Be sure to subscribe and leave a quick review to help us keep bringing you transformational conversations like this. Until next time, I'm Chris McNeil. This is Thought Leadership Studio, and thanks for listening.
Thought Leadership Studio.